big one.
Swinging into a Saturday of jazz, blues, and more on the beat, a couple of tracks from Benny Goodman to open up our show today, Let's Dance, followed by the Jersey Bounce, and one from the new Reformation band, Radio, from their recording, Unleashed. The band marks 48 years this year. They will also be a part of the 15th annual Saginaw On Stage Music Festival. That is coming up this Friday, March the 9th. All the details about that fest coming up, SaginawOnStage.com. All things about the new Reformation band that you might want to know, NewRef.com. Wanting to mark the milestone of the nearly 50-year career of the new Reformation band, I had the great pleasure to sit down with my old friend, longtime Mid-Michigan musician and ambassador to the music, you bet, Dave Opperman. We sat down in studio this week. It's a story I know I've told on the air before, and I know it's a story that you have told from the stage for many, many years. But as the band here in February of 2018 has marked now 48 years, I would guess then the plan was not to do that because, as you've often kind of phrased it, it was supposed to be, I don't know, in the common vernacular, a one and done or a one-off
right.
or whatever. Tell
yeah,
us
one,
that story again.
One and done,
would.
Right. Yeah. That was it. Yeah, it was kind of a crazy idea, I thought, anyway. It was back in 1970 when the Reverend Gary Miller, who was at the First Congregational Church in my hometown of Saginaw, we got to know one another. I was playing in a bar or around the place, doing some sing-along back then, and he'd wander in, and he also played trumpet besides being a minister, and so he'd sit in, and so it was after we got to know each other a little bit that he suggested one day that could it be possible that we could put together a seven-piece Dixieland band to do a worship service? And I said, you mean in the church? He says, yeah. I mean, you mean like Sunday morning? He said, yep. I said, well, yeah, I guess you're the guy in charge. If you've got clearance, well, let's try it. And as we did find out, it was easy to start, and then it became impossible to stop. So so we didn't learn that part yet. And as you say, we're now approaching frighteningly a half a century. And that's way beyond where we were supposed to be.
Did you ever think, though, when you were playing, and I assume that there were some settings maybe where it was more than just solo? I mean, did you ever think, along with the day job and so forth, of at some point it would be maybe kind of cool to put together, whether it was going to be a Dixieland band or something else? Did you ever have that as an idea before this one kind of fell into place, as it were?
Yes, because actually, of course, I hadn't been out of college that long. Well, I guess about 10 years maybe. But when I was at college, I did form a Dixieland band. And so, and I grew up in a house where my father was a Dixieland fan, so there was plenty of that music being heard. So I grew up with it. And so, yes, I did put one together in college, and we had a number of gigs at fraternity houses and things like that. And then when I came back to Saginaw, I would put together a group, maybe four or five if somebody needed it for a dance at the country club. But I didn't normally go up to the seven that's more or less required. It's kind of fun when people try and book the band and they say, you know, well, we'd love your Dixieland band, but we can like only afford three people. And I say, well, that's like the four freshmen. No, you can't have the three freshmen. You got to have the four freshmen, or it's not the same group. So eventually we realized, I mean, obviously we can do it with six, but it's always been traditional for us to do it with seven. And I don't think there's been more than a handful of gigs in all those years, which literally is now thousands of gigs that, you know, didn't have the full seven.
How soon after the one and done, was it an immediate reaction? Was it everybody kind of looked around and said, yes, this might be fun? Was there, I mean, obviously there had to be that step, and obviously a pretty big one, to deciding we're going to do this at least a little bit longer and see what we can come up with.
Right. Well, it was the traditional Peggy Lee, is that all there is? And it was instantaneous. We didn't have to go home and think about it, because that singular event was a sort of a screaming success, obviously not due to a superiority of music, but enthusiasm counted for a lot. The church was filled. We were accompanied by a 40-voice choir and a church organist. singing the music of the church, and I'm not an overly religious person, but it sort of made the hair stand up on the back of your neck, the response that we would get by playing the hymns of the church, and with an enthusiastic response by not only everybody in the congregation, but everybody in the band.
Was this original lineup then the one that went on to make the first recording? How long did it take before you really kind of coalesced and got to the point where that first recording took place?
It actually took a couple of years. Now, we did, you have proof of this, we did make a 45.
Yes.
That hardly counts, but I mean it. We did make
a 45.
Well, for
us purists, it counts just fine.
Right. But then there was a splitting of the band, which happened when Reverend Gary, who really got the idea of forming it, decided he wanted to do this full-time and travel the country. So he split the band in two. One of the people that he took with him was my brother Nick. So, and they formed a group called the Celebration Roadshow, which is one of four groups that we have spawned since we started the New Reformation Band. And so we didn't get to make an album by that time, and so it was only after that split occurred. So that means we were more than 2 years into it by then.
When you talk about that band, that Gary Miller and then your brother Nick having the chance to go and do it, when you kind of say travel the country doing it, you're obviously going to do this more than a one-time concert, but how quickly did you start making this, I don't know, half of your career, three-quarters of your career, depending on, because you all had other jobs and other pursuits, at least from the members that I worked most closely with back 20 years ago when we did a lot of concerts together during my time on Nightside. But the idea of a band that's really full-time or pretty darn close to full-time, which...
I think there was a majority of the group of us that did not envision going full-time. The Reverend, of course, did, and he was successful. But they had a network of churches where they literally could sort of plan ahead and find places to play. And then they were the type that would go into, somewhere like the Holiday Inn down in Indiana, where they could go in for like 2 or 3 weeks on a contract. And obviously, that if you can do that a few times, it you can make it work. And so I think there were some of us who were probably pretty happy with our day jobs, who didn't necessarily think, yeah, we want to do this, because life on the road is certainly a different way to live. And there's also a difference if you've got family, if you have a wife or if you have children, and not all of them are cheering to have you say, well, we're going away, we'll see you in a couple of months,
yeah.
Which would be once you set out, you try and obviously keep yourself going as long as you can without coming back home in between.
Marking 48 years this year, the New Reformation Band, their leader and founder, Dave Opperman, joining us here this week on The Beat.
This tune, as I say, is one of the classic jazz blues tunes, very dirty blues. The words are clean, but the music is filthy, as you'll hear shortly now, as the band launches into this version that features a Dave Tatro vocal, the Tin Roof Blues.
You're going to like this. What about us? Yeah. 1, 2, 3.
Thank you. so easy to do. It's called Shake That Thing.
Another one from the New Reformation Band, a Dave Tatro vocal for the old Tin Roof Blues, and Harry Goldson out of Northern Michigan with a version of 2 o'clock Jump. Swinging along for this Saturday here on WCMU, your music and NPR news station. I'm David Nicholas, special edition of the show with a spotlight on the New Reformation Band this week, marking 48 years, as we said at the top, and also a part of Saginaw On Stage, the music festival marking its 15th year this coming Friday, March the 9th, from 5 to 11. Doors open at 4:30. That'll be at the Apple Mountain Resort. Details at saginawonstage.com. If you want to check out all the info about the recordings, the gigs, the history, all the things connected to Dave Opperman and the New Reformation Band, their website, newref.com. Some music from Ellington and Basie coming up, and more from the New Ref Boys as we continue. As we continue now with some more of my conversation earlier this week with Dave Opperman, founding member of the New Reformation Band. So you talked early on about the original lineup with Gary Miller, and then he ventured out then with your brother Nick. Two names that people know affiliated with the group. Along with yourself, longest tenured member, either for continuous service or over the year. I mean, talk a little bit about the lineup, the number of folks that have been in and out of the group that have certainly made a mark here.
Well, since, as we already discussed, we try to have seven musicians every time we perform, and right now I've got a fairly regular group, and two of those are Dave Tatro on the trumpet, and Keith DeWitt on the trombone. Which brings us to the story of one of the first breakups, if we don't call it a breakup when we split and the Reverend went off in his direction, and that started the Celebration Roadshow. In 1979, well, there was a little friction in the band, and one of the members of the group tried to convince other members that I was somehow stealing money from them and somehow, you know, not being fair. And so I found myself very unusually 9 years in to waking up one day and realizing that I had to fire 6 of my 7 musicians, me being the 7th.
Wow.
And I had a week and a half before our next gig. And so in 1979, we had literally a total change of musicians, so that in the history of the band, I'm the only one that's been there forever, and I would be the first to say that I think I've never considered myself an exceptionally or even moderately good piano player. I've always felt that I have a certain amount of pride in being able to be a pretty good band leader. Part of that is being an adequate MC, and part of it is knowing how to pick good musicians to surround yourself with.
Dare I ask, if it's not an uncomfortable question, did any of those riffs ever get healed with any of those from 70? And I'm not going to name names. If people were there and remember, that's up to them. But
It's a good question.
Yeah.
It's a good question, Dave. And yes, I think that everybody that was in that group eventually came back at one point or another. But that also was the production of the second band, which was the Renaissance Jazz Band. And, of course, that name sort of similar, but
sure.
but it worked, and so there was the second spinoff.
And you said that there were a couple of more, just I would assume then from some people that decided to go off and do some other projects. And the two that you mentioned are familiar names from the times when we worked more regularly together. Dr. Vince O'Keefe was another member that I knew back from my time as a student at the University of Michigan Flint, and he was a long tenured member of the group as well.
No question, and Vinny is still there. He's sort of retired from playing, but he's still very active. Well, the other two were actually members of the band who started their own groups, but then, I can name the names. Dave Tatro, who joined us in 79, formed a group called Wally's Warehouse Waifs. And he's just more or less, I think, not doing that because they were doing a lot of touring. And we did go through periods where we would literally be flying to somewhere in the country almost every weekend because we played all of the jazz festival circuits for our type of music. And so Dave had formed that group, and as I say, I think now it's sort of dormant at the moment, but that's great because he's still working with us, and he's a marvelous personality, marvelous trumpet player. The other one was probably one of the most interesting success stories in our group, and that is a gentleman named Dave Bennett.
Mm-hmm.
And so here, if that story is worth mentioning, because at one point in time, David was 14 years old at the time, and we heard rumors about this young man playing the clarinet who not only looked like Benny Goodman but sounded like Benny Goodman. So we were going down to Detroit, which was where he lived in that area, and convinced him, why didn't he come over and sit in with us? Well, it only took like 2 numbers, and we realized that this man was a genius in the clarinet. And so Dave Bennett became also a regular member of our band, full-time member of the band for a number of years. And then, as you might also expect, with all of his talent, he formed a number of groups. I mean, he is still active now. He played Carnegie Hall with the symphony there not long ago, which is certainly a feather in anybody's cap. And he does his Benny Goodman reminiscent show with symphonies all over the country. And but it's interesting because Dave has great loyalty to the new ref, and if he's available for a date, he'll play with us every time. And so it's delightful because here, So, as a matter of fact, at one point we had four Daves in the band because we've named Dave Tatro, Dave Bennett, myself, Dave Opperman, and Dave Miller. So, like, we have some gigs coming up here. We'll be doing the Jazz on Jefferson show in June, and Dave Bennett will be with us on that show. And then we do a one in the garden, the Rose Garden, in the July series in Saginaw. And that's one of those other gigs that, as a matter of fact, it's not unusual when we had we were first choice because they had like six Wednesdays in the series. So they would come to me and say, okay, here are the six gigs. We're giving you first choice. Find out when Bennett's available, and that's the date you've got. So he's...
Everybody's reputation preceding them, I guess.
That's right.
Dave Opperman of the New Reformation Band, 48 years and still going strong with all the recordings to their credit. We'll talk a little bit about the remastering and the reissue of all of these recordings and some of the highlights of their recorded legacy coming up here on The Beat. Thank you. Jazz royalty in that set, Duke Ellington paired with Coleman Hawkins for a version of The Jeep Is Jumpin', and another one from the Impulse label, Count Basie and his Kansas City 7 for Count's Place. Here with Jazz, Blues, and More on the Beat. More with a new Reformation band coming up, and also some music later on from some of the artists also appearing with a new Reformation band this coming Friday, March the 9th, from 5 to 11 at Apple Mountain in Freeland for the 15th annual Saginaw On Stage Music Festival. It was a real treat to spend an extended afternoon visit with my old friend Dave Opperman. We had a lot of chance to catch up on things and look back on the history of the band, the recordings, and so much more. 48 years this year for the new Reformation band. So with Humble Beginnings, starting out with a single 45 to an original LP and a handful of LPs, to then the actual marketing of CDs, and now what has turned into mining the catalog, going back and finding all of the tapes, doing a lot of remastering. How many total recordings, then, are we talking about over the 48-year history of the band?
At the moment, we have 16. And you left out one gap, and that was tapes.
The tapes, too? Okay,
yes. That's right, cassette tapes. And we realized, it was not that long ago, not that many years ago, that we realized that for all practical purposes, those five or six recordings, whatever it was, are gone. I mean, if you could find one of the tapes, you couldn't find a player to play it on. So we had to go back and listen. And one of the things that happens when you're in my position of having done this for 48 years and realizing that the clock is ticking and it's not going to be forever, no band has played forever, that the word legacy came into my vocabulary. And the thought that, if I can say this again humbly, the success of the band has so much to do with the musicians who made up the band, much more so than myself, except for whatever skills I had in finding good musicians to be with us. And so the thought occurred to me that, you know, maybe 50 years from now, there'll be Martians that'll be inhabiting some planet, and someone will stumble across one of our CDs or something, and they find some way to play it, and that one of these persons would say, "Hey, you know, those guys were pretty darn good." And so
that's legacy.
The whole idea of the legacy right now. So the thing we started with was, of course, the first three were long playing records. We'd only realized we'd actually still do have some, because obviously vinyl is coming back.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, everything else is going away. and then you have those five or six that were on cassette tapes, which obviously needed to be re-released. And in so doing, we're very lucky to have available Andy Reid, a gentleman in Bay City who is known not just area-wide but nationwide for being a genius at remastering. And you give him something and he will make it 10, 20, 30% better than it was. So as we're going forward, we are remastering all of those that were cassette tapes, because obviously they're gone for all practical purposes. And then from that point on through 16, we've had all CDs, and I think you and I have already mentioned the fact that it's a little scary for those of us in the business of performing that a major company will say, "We're not going to do CDs anymore." The only break that we have is that if we look at the core fan base for the new Reformation band, they're sort of in the same age group we are. And so a lot of them are still just discovering CDs. And so so we don't print the quantity that we used to when we remaster one, but we still put it out as a CD in a jewel case, attractively packaged with interesting stories on the recording itself and that sort of thing. And we still are selling CDs, and now we are on every major music source, whether it's Spotify, Pandora, Amazon. New Ref is now on all of those locations. So
who would have thunk after 145, right?
Yeah, right.
now have all then been at this point, is it the CDs, the ones that were on album, the ones that were on cassette, have they all been completely remastered and are being re-released as discs, even those that were original CD releases, all 16 recordings, or the priority, obviously, to make sure you've got the best copy of the real earliest work.
No question that anything that was on a 33 and a third record or was a cassette tape, all of those are being remastered on CDs. After that point, there are some, and as a matter of fact, I think we're going to hear one of those selections, one in our number 14, which was called Unleashed. And I can proudly say the American Rag magazine actually rated that an A+, which they rarely, rarely did. And there are fans of ours who like basically all of our CDs, but there are a number that think that that's our best one. And that one was recorded so well that there's no urgency to try and do any remastering. So we listen to each one and say, okay, is this a good candidate? And in a number of the cases, it was. As I say, Andy Reid is a master at that. But I think there may be a couple that we really don't need to redo.
And here's an example of just that. It is the New Reformation Band and the track called The Rhythm King.